This episode of 3GT is brought to you by Crown and Covenant. Stay tuned later in the episode for information about how you can receive a gift from our friends at Crown and Covenant. We're giving away a two-book set from Dr. Rosaria Butterfield. More information on that later in this podcast. Welcome to 3GT, a podcast where a pastor, parishioner, and professor have lively conversations on practical Christian living from a Reformed perspective. For more information, visit our website at 3GT.fm. Welcome to this episode of 3GT. Today we're going to be talking about the Lord's Day and the Sabbath day. And are those terms interchangeable? And what should we and should we not do on the Lord's Day? And how do we honor the Lord's Day without falling into legalism? So we have quite a few questions we're going to be wrestling with today. So guys, if you're ready, I'm just going to throw this out there and see what you have to say. But Lord's Day versus Sabbath, what's the difference? There's some terminology that kind of gets thrown around. They seem to be used interchangeably. What are your thoughts on the interchangeability of those terms? And should we prefer one or the other, or does it matter?
I do think a lot of believers use those interchangeably. Of course, the observance of one day in seven goes back to the Old Testament, even back to the days of creation, where God created in 6 days and then rested on the seventh day. And that was codified in the law of Moses and the Ten Commandments. So the word Sabbath means rest, and God's people rested. And that was used to indicate that God had created this world, that day of rest, and was also looking forward to the redemption that Christ would bring to the world. I think you find that in the Old Testament, a view of the Sabbath day. And when you come to the issue of the Lord's Day, we see some New Testament evidence that it was called that. The first day of the week, Christ's resurrection day. John says in the book of Revelation, the first chapter, that he was in the Spirit on the Lord's Day, meaning the day that Christ had arisen. I think one great Old Testament passage that foresees this is found in the end of Isaiah 58, where there is an equating of the 2 days, where the prophet Isaiah says, if you turn your foot from the Sabbath, if you turn back your foot from the Sabbath, from doing your pleasure on my holy day, and call the Sabbath a delight, and the holy day of the Lord honorable, or, you know, day of the Lord could also be called Lord's Day. So if you call the Sabbath a delight, or the Lord's Day holy and honorable. So I think the terms are interchangeable.
I would agree with Barry. The only other thing that I would add is one of the reasons I would see them as interchangeable is not only because in Revelation 1:10, as Barry noted, John uses that expression Lord's Day, which seems to have a correlative relationship with Isaiah 58. But in Matthew 12, verse 8, Jesus calls himself the Lord of the Sabbath. The Son of Man is the Lord of the Sabbath. Part of the lordship of Jesus Christ extends over this thing we call Sabbath. And in fact, that's maybe additionally one of the reasons I think that command is still in force. If the lordship of Christ extends over that day, if the Sabbath command is no longer in force, then Christ has given up part of his lordship. But he claims that day. The Son of Man is Lord of the Sabbath. He claims it for himself. I'd regard them as interchangeable. But I would say, in a pastoral context, I think I probably try to emphasize the Lord's Day, that expression, more than Sabbath. And part of that is cultural baggage. People think of Sabbath and they immediately think of Pharisees. Right. Sometimes that's because I just want to make sure that my congregation, as we gather together for worship, we realize, well, yeah, this is the day of Sabbath, but the Lord Jesus has claimed this day in victory from the grave, and it's his day. He has put his name upon it in a very special way, and so we especially love the Lord's Day. So pastorally, I probably emphasize one more than the other, but I do regard them as interchangeable.
And Aaron, if I might just add to what Kyle's saying,
sure.
I really agree with that. And one of the things I used to just remind the congregation of, and still do when I have the opportunity, is that the Lord's Day that we're celebrating week by week is in preparation for the great day of the Lord that is yet to come, the great Sabbath rest that's yet to come when Christ returns. So I love the idea of that sense of victory and all that Kyle's talking about when we speak of the Lord's Day.
That's so speaking of this idea of preparation and, you know, what this final Lord's Day would look like, you know, let's look at the shorter catechism. In question 60, it asks, how is the Sabbath to be sanctified? And the answer is, the Sabbath is to be sanctified by a holy resting all that day, even from such worldly employments and recreations as are lawful on other days, and spending the whole time in public and private exercises of God's worship, except so much as to be taken up in the works of necessity and mercy. So in there's a clear, I think, directive of things we are supposed to do, and I think a rather kind of a vague directive of what we should not do. Can you guys share, you know, any insight on what are, you know, things that we can practically do, things that I can do as a father and a husband to encourage my family to sanctify the Sabbath, to observe the Sabbath? And so what should I be doing on that day, and what should I not be doing on that day, generally speaking? And then I'll follow that up then with, how do I avoid kind of getting trapped in this legalism trap? And, you know, Kyle, you mentioned the Pharisees earlier. A lot of people are kind of weary of having, you know, guidelines and regulations for the day because they don't want to come off as Pharisees or as legalists. So any insight there?
Well, I think once you recognize that the Lord's Day is a commandment, that it's one of the 10 great commandments that the Lord's given us, and you begin to order your life around it, ordering your life around preparing to worship God, things begin to fall into place. God ordered Israel's life around it in the wilderness. He had the manna appear 6 days of the week, but not on the seventh day, and the day before they were to collect twice as much, and just builds into the principle that we should be preparing for the day. So one practical thing that we can be doing is in our work weeks, making sure we're getting our work done in the 6 days the Lord has given us so that we can have this day of rest on the seventh day. And that applies from anyone to, you know, someone doing housework, yard work, and so far as possible, the business of a man or woman out in the workforce, to students getting their assignments done on those 6 days, to even pastors making sure that insofar as possible they're getting their sermons ready, and they can, even though they are working, called to work in part on that day, that they can still enter that day with a sense of rest and peacefulness rather than rush. So ordering your day, ordering your week around the day really helps things start falling into place.
Which, to add to that, I don't want to just recapitulate what Barry has said, but we do need to remember that the Sabbath command is not just keep one day holy.
Right.
It is 6 days you shall work and do all your labor. And I think I didn't grow up in a home that recognized the Sabbath it was family day. It wasn't the Lord's Day. It was family day. And so our activities were governed simply by that rule. It's family day. You don't get to go and play with your friends. We're going to do everything as a family today. But where I was going with that is, I remember when I first began to think through this issue of the Lord's Day, and in relation to what Barry said, it's actually quite amazing that the God who is over all and in all and through all gives us 6 days to do everything that we need to do, and one day that is set apart from that to be kept holy to him. He doesn't reverse that. 6 days you shall keep holy to me, and one day you get to do all your work. But in his goodness, in his wisdom, in his kindness, he's given us 6 days to get all of our work done so that that one day, one seventh of our time, can be set apart for him. So again, I don't want to recapitulate what Barry said, but there is that aspect of the Sabbath command that I think really needs to be emphasized.
Right.
So you guys, you know, you both mentioned this, the, you know, a positive command to worship. And I don't think anybody would disagree with that, that we are called to worship on the Lord's Day. There's also, though, this positive command to rest. So we have worship and we have rest. Those are the two things we're supposed to do. So one thing that I kind of struggle with is, what does the rest mean? Does it mean I simply stop doing my job? I stop doing other working things, or should I actively seek to rest? Because there are weeks that I get home from all the church goings on the Lord's Day, and I'm exhausted because it's been anything but restful. And I think you guys as pastors probably sense that even more than anyone, because you're actually, you know, you're presiding over the worship service and preaching. But what does the rest mean? Should I actually be like trying to relax, or am I simply ceasing from my typical work practices?
Well, one of the things about the Sabbath day command is it's a positive command. So many of the other commands are stated in the negative. I think with it being stated in the duty to remember or observe, that there's some freedom in how we're going to go about doing that. And I think we have to really evaluate these kinds of questions. I think there are some Sabbath days where the physical demands of a week would mean that my schedule should be such that I can actually take a nap or, you know, rest quietly, read, do things like that, that I need to restore my body with. But on the other hand, we need to look at our Lord's example of how he observed the Sabbath day. And he often was quite busy on the day, healing. Many of his great miracles are done, from the man born blind to other people, were done on the Sabbath day. So we need to make sure that we're not using it just as a day of idleness, which the catechisms also encourages in that direction.
Which I think is a very important point to make. I guess when I think of the rest that we are to take on the Lord's Day, it's not inactivity. It's not complacency. It's not this passivity that defines our day, but it is a resting or a putting aside of those things that are lawful in and of themselves, things that Scripture has not forbidden, but to put those things aside, to rest from those things because they give obstacles and they give hindrances to concentrated worship and fellowship with God's people. So when I look at the word rest, I don't think first and foremost in my mind doesn't pop up, well, that means that the Lord's Day should be a day to take a nap. I think sometimes taking a nap is very good. It prepares. I know that on a Sunday afternoon, after teaching Sunday school and preaching and looking forward to teaching another class and preaching again, sometimes it's my afternoon nap that actually prepares me for worship. But it's not that idleness. It's putting aside those things that will hinder you from worship and fellowship.
Mm-hmm. I do think as we evaluate the rest, I think it's, you know, it begins with spiritual rest, and that's found in the gospel and the worship of Christ and the reflection of all that he's done for us. But then from that flows other kinds of rest we should be bringing. So we should have examined again our bodies. It's a day to remember creation. And one of the restful things we used to practice as a family, especially when our children were younger, was just getting outside and taking a walk. My wife's wonderful at admiring creation, seeing flowers and things like that I would normally just pass on by. And so I just remember so many good times of being out with the children, walking and talking, and just that was a very restful thing for us to do. And it also means, I think, remembering the poor, the needy, the lonely, the sick. It's a day where we can go provide rest to other people by visiting them and encouraging them. And I think we need to be careful not to miss that aspect of it as well.
So Barry, would that then fall into the category of works that are of necessity and works of mercy then?
Right. Sometimes people read that in the catechism, you know, they accept so much in the duties of necessity and mercy. And it's almost like if you have to do works of mercy or visit someone, that you can do it. But I don't think that's really the spirit of it, especially as you look further at the Westminster, particularly the Directory of Public Worship. It really encourages the engagement with the needy on the Lord's Day. And again, looking at the example of our Lord, we should have that as part of our thinking and processing as we're thinking about how I can best practice the Lord's Day.
I'm just going to be Barry's yes man today because he's one step ahead of me on everything. But with that showing mercy, I think to emphasize again what Barry said, it's not in our mind as we've thought about how we keep the Lord's Day, it's not that mercy is simply allowable and you can mm-hmm. do it if you have to. I think it's actually commanded. Mm-hmm. I think it's commanded that we find ways to be merciful to one another, whether that is, as Barry said, visiting the poor, the sick, the shut-ins, whether that is, as a pastor, making phone calls to people who may not have been in church. Well, what's going on? Do you need anything? Or even hospitality and having people over. You know, it can be very exhausting to be a pastor and spend your afternoon with people over at the house. But I also find sometimes that's the most refreshing. The fellowship just rejuvenates my spirit.
Yes.
My most, just in case Barry cares, my most fond Lord's Day memory in my life is when we had Barry and Miriam over to our house for the first time. I'd never met him.
Really?
Yes, in Grand Rapids.
Wow.
We had you guys over, and it was such an afternoon of wonderful fellowship. It is right up there on some of probably my favorite Lord's Day I've ever had.
Well, and it was for us as well, in particular because I remember meeting the young man who ended up having I think it was a form of cancer, and he ended up dying. And I just remember his love for you. And when I heard about, you know, this illness that he ended up going through and you're ministering to him, I just remember the playful interplay you guys had with one another and the love that you were sharing. So I remember that day as well.
So, guys, the part of this phrase that we're talking about here in the catechism is also talking about works of necessity. So what sort of things would fall into works of necessity?
Kyle, I'm going to let you go first.
Oh, no.
No longer can you hide.
I think there's some obvious ones. Things like those things that maintain civil and public order. I would look at police officers and military. Those are works of necessity. I don't know that they could afford to cease for the day. Emergency services, hospitals, clinics, probably not so much, but somewhere where in case of emergency, people are available. Those are things that the easy answer are obviously works of necessity.
But what about
Barry? Why don't you add to that?
Well, what about more practical things? Like, do you brush your teeth on the Sabbath day, Kyle, and comb your hair?
Oh, no, I do that at 11:59 p.m. on Saturday night.
Once a week, whether you need it or not, right?
So that's fair. So right, works of necessity, things to keep up those things that are part of your normal routine to prepare you for the day, I think are fine. Although maybe I should note, John Murray, the esteemed Westminster professor, kind of a stalwart of Presbyterianism, John Murray did wake up at 11 p.m. on Saturday night to shower and shave because he felt that to do that on Lord's Day morning would have been a waste of his time and was not necessary.
So, I assume things, you know, very practical things like, you know, engaging in transportation to get to church, things like that would fall into that category. So this is one, we don't have to parse this too finely, but I was recently in another country, and in order to get to the worship service, the people I was staying with, we had to hire a taxi to get there because they didn't have a vehicle. Our options were public transportation or taxi because the church was too far away. They didn't have a car in this particular country. It was uncommon for people to have a car. In a situation like that, do you think that would fall into this category of necessity where that is your only way to get to worship is to actually pay someone to take you there?
I think when you get into particular situations like this, you got to take them case by case. And this is one of those places where I start getting, like, I don't want to become the Sabbath police officer or the Sabbath judge where I'm trying to judge each individual case. One of the things about the Sabbath day, and particularly as you see how God treated Israel with respect to it, is it's not only a individual matter, but you really have to think about it in a familial way, because the commandment talks about making sure your sons and daughters. And then you also have to think about it in a corporate further corporate sense or even national sense where you have responsibility for employees. I think the ability to practice the Sabbath day freely is a blessing that God gives. It's a blessing that he's given to our nation historically, but we're losing that because we've forsaken him, we've forsaken his day. And so consequently, a lot of Christians find it more difficult in our own country, which is pretty free, to keep it because of stringent requirements by employees, or employers, and things of that nature. So you go to another country where they may not have very much Christian influence at all. And for me to judge a brother over in another country who's trying his best to honor the Lord's Day when there's all these obstacles against it, I just don't think it's healthy to do that. They've got to work that out, you know, before the Lord.
So, a couple of things. The RPCNA is the first denomination that I've been a member in that has this high a view of the Lord's Day, and over the years that I've been part of the RPCNA, I've met people who have some interesting practices within their family, and it's of particular interest to me as a father. So Kyle, I'm gonna actually call you out because I know you have a bucket of toys for your children that you bring out specifically on the Lord's Day. And I had never heard of anything like this until I met people in the RP church. And I was very, very curious about this practice. And I would love for you, if you could just share with our listeners, you know, what is the Lord's Day tub of toys for? Why do you have that? And do you recommend that for other parents, or is that just something you've adopted as for your family?
Is this for the kids or for Kyle? This is for
me. I hope that was clear. This is my Lord's Day toy tub. I'm actually going to give you two answers, because while we adopted a practice that we saw in some households, we did not adopt it for the same reason. So I'll give you our rationale first, and then I'll try to explain, because I'm very familiar with many people who would do this for a very different reason than we do. We primarily do it because we want to monitor the sound volume of our children on the Lord's Day in case we want to take a nap. So the Lord's Day tub is actually filled with scissors, paper, glue, colored pencils, tape, things of that sort that we don't want them to use throughout the week, so that we come to Sunday and there's none left, because that's what my kids generally do. They love to waste their resources. So the only reason we do it is so that when mom and dad want to go take a nap, we can say, hey kids, let's get the Lord's Day tub out. And it's filled with quiet activities so that Rachel and I can actually sleep without being interrupted. So that is actually the only reason we have a Lord's Day tub. But we did, in some ways, adopt and modify that. There are a number of families that we know who have particular toys that they bring out on the Lord's Day. The reason they do that is to help even the youngest of their children to realize there is something special about the Lord's Day, mm-hmm. that it's not like every other day of the week. So when you get home from church or between services, and I really do think children need to burn energy off. I think that's not only a work of mercy for parents, it's a work of necessity. Children have to be able to vent their energy if we're going to hope that they sit through a Lord's Day worship services, not once, but twice a Lord's Day. And so these parents that we know, many of them, just for very good reasons, will say the Lord's Day is a very special day. It's a wonderful day. So we're going to use set-apart toys. It's also to help encourage in their children's hearts a certain delight in the day. Isaiah 58 mm-hmm. says that we should call the Sabbath a delight. So I know parents who kind of save the best toys in the toy tub for the Lord's Day. And on the Lord's Day, you get to play with the very best toys, because this is a special day that should bring cheer and gladness and delight to our hearts. So I do know parents who do that. I don't know if every parent does it for that reason, but that's how we've had it explained to us.
Mm-hmm. We had a special shelf of books we called the Lord's Day books that were more Christian stories or biographies, and encouraged our children to read those. I think those types of practices, again, if you don't become, an application of this for one family might not be the same for another family. And I think that's where we get into trouble is I remember a minister I greatly respect. I remember he preached and he gave an example that his family, their boys didn't ride bikes on the Sabbath day. And so, you know, that was impressed upon me. But I know in other settings where a family who doesn't get a lot of time together during the week, they actually take a bike ride with one another in order to just be outside and enjoy one another's presence. It's not a rigorous bike ride. It's a recreational one. And I just think people have to have that. We have to give people those sorts of freedoms to work out their particular application as to what is best. I think you really, you know, you mentioned legalism. I think we really get into legalism when we start trying to create a list of things you can or cannot do in this kind of area in the Lord's Day. Again, we're not to work, so we should really try to be free from work, but there are these types of things that we need to do to shepherd our families or shepherd the community in which we're in that we need to give each other a lot of grace and love to do.
So I've got two final questions, and these are, I think, very practical ones for those of us who find ourselves in situations where it's difficult to observe the Lord's Day in the way we would want to. So my first question is this: if I have a job in which my employer requires me to work on the Lord's Day, what recommendations do you have for people who find themselves in that situation and may or may not have any control over their schedule?
Again, I think to go back to something Barry said earlier, many of these things need to be taken on a case-by-case basis. I think sometimes it's hard to lay down an absolute rule. There are some nurses who work Lord's Day, and part of that is to be merciful to their coworkers. The hospital has to be open, and so somebody has to be there. You know, does the Christian say, well, I'm never going to work the Lord's Day, but I'm going to make all my fellow coworkers do it? So there are instances like that where I think you do the best with what you have. I think there are other jobs, and I'm not about to name them specifically, where it's not necessary. And as a pastor, I would actually encourage that member, you know, maybe you should pursue another job. Mm-hmm. Maybe you need to keep this one for now, but this is not ideal. The Lord doesn't call us specifically into certain workplaces, but he does give us general principles. And one of those is, work in a job that allows you to keep my commandments.
Right.
And if somebody is in a job that does not allow them to keep the Lord's Day, my encouragement to them would be, especially if it's not a work of necessity, you maybe should look elsewhere for employment.
One pastoral thing I've sought to practice too is before they make decisions like that, to go have conversations with their employer. Many times, people who've gone and approached their employer and done it humbly and explained their convictions have been allowed to have that freedom that some of the other employees in that company or workplace do not have. I've even been asked a time or two, they'll say to the employee, well, how do I know your church really believes that? And I've written a letter or two as a pastor explaining the situation and naming the person. Mm-hmm. And that's helped them to maintain that freedom.
Oh, that's very helpful. I never really thought about that, where, you know, that someone would ask that to be verified and that, you know, the pastor would be able to do that for them. But that's great that you were able to help them out in that respect. So the other kind of practical
real quick
thing,
Aaron,
this,
if I can.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Barry, will you write a letter like that to my session so I can have the Lord's Day off?
Yeah, right. I'd probably first send him a Chariots of Fire. Let him watch that.
Oh, okay.
Oh, so my last question, guys, is something that I run into when I travel a lot. So if you've listened to our past few episodes where I was introduced, you know that I gallivant around the world and sometimes am gone on the Lord's Day. And my desire is to find a place to worship on the Lord's Day. And sometimes I can find a great church. You know, I will often just go to the NAPARC website and pull up a directory and just start searching for churches nearby, and have often been able to find some. It's been great just to meet people who have common acquaintances. You know, I'll say, oh yeah, I live in Pittsburgh. You know, I'm part of the RPCNA. I'm connected with RPTS, and then they'll start rattling off names of people who they have connections with, and we often find common connections. It's been just a great way to find fellowship in other parts of the world. And but sometimes I can't find a church that I would be comfortable and able to in good conscience go and worship in. And so I will have often just, sat in my hotel room and, listened to sermons. And so do you have any practical advice for someone like myself who finds themselves on the road on the Lord's Day, looking for a place to worship?
I think it's similar to being ill and having to stay home or other situations that might arise. I think, you have to do what you can possibly do without violating your conscience, because that's another thing that we need to keep reminding people is you have your own conscience to maintain before the Lord. You better seek to do to the best of your ability what is right and holy to do. And so if there isn't a place, if you're in a country and there's no churches around you and you find yourself there on the Lord's Day, then I think to have a devoted time to private worship would be good. And to be able to, that is the wonder of technology, to be able to tune into a sermon or even a service is a good substitute when you find yourself in that situation. Again, you have to say that doesn't mean then that someone can just stay home and do church online. We're not to forsake our assembling together, so you should do every possible conceivable thing you can do, but if the Lord prevents you because of a providence, then that option to me seems a good one.
Well, thanks, guys. This has been very helpful for me as someone who kind of is working through these kind of ideas of how best to honor the Lord's Day. Any final thoughts before we wrap it up?
My closing thought would simply be we've mentioned the word legalism a couple times in connection to Sabbath, Lord's Day observance. And while I understand that, you look at the Pharisees and you see the way the Pharisees piled on man-made traditions and regulations that had the appearance of godliness but lacked the power, so on and so forth. I do think it needs to be emphasized, especially to the broader church culture that we live in. I don't think legalism is our problem today.
Yeah.
I just recently heard a message from Alistair Begg on this point. And he really, in a very pastoral but very stern way, took his congregation to task and basically said, you guys want to be, the charge of legalism is so quickly thrown up. And he basically said, what a red herring. What a way to try to divert attention from the fact that your problem is not legalism. It's that you have no regard for the Lord's Day.
Wow. Amen.
And he drew the example and the comparison. He said, how many of you look at a man who endeavors with all of his might to be faithful to his wife and says, oh, you're legalistic on the seventh commandment. And he really just pointed out legalism is not the problem of the broader church today. It's a complete reduction, almost ignoring of this command.
Yeah.
So I want to say that. I say that with pastoral sensitivity, realizing, especially some of our listeners, I know the backgrounds they come in. Legalism is an issue for some, but by far and larger, broader church, I don't think it's legalism.
Mm-hmm. The only thing I would add is it's just such a delight. I'm so thankful for a God who automatically commands that we take 7 weeks plus of vacation every year. And if we honor it and we really do take delight in him on that day, honor him, he honors us. The promise in Isaiah is that we'll ride on the heights of the earth and be fed with the heritage of Jacob, our father, that the blessings and promises that God gives in his word regarding those who honor him, we will experience. And I've seen that. Another thing I've just seen is the Lord planting churches on the Lord's Day. We've seen other bodies of believers gathering together and been able to go and minister to them and help them on this day. And so I've just seen so many wonderful things the Lord's done on this day. And really, I think our desire in this podcast is just to encourage people to receive this wonderful gift that God has given to them.
Well, thank you guys for all of your insight on how best to keep the Lord's Day. And thank you all out there for listening to this episode of 3GT. This week, Crown and Covenant is giving away three sets of two books by Dr. Rosaria Champagne Butterfield. The two-book set includes Openness Unhindered and Secret Thoughts of an Unlikely Convert. This is a $27 value, and we'll be giving this away to the first three people who go to our Facebook page and share this week's podcast on their own Facebook page. So we're looking for three shares. And the first three people to do that this week will receive this two-book set from Crown and Covenant. You can find more information about Crown and Covenant at crownandcovenant.com.